Welcome to Wyoming Stories. I'm Micah Schweitzer. On this podcast, we bring you stories about Wyomingites in their own words. Some were recorded by StoryCorps, a project that records conversations between loved ones. Others were recorded as part of our own Wyoming Stories project. Today, we'll get to know a burlesque dancer, we'll hear about a chef who cooked for Buffalo Bill Cody, and we'll hear from a Laramie resident who learned to read in college. But first, a story about alcoholism and domestic abuse. In this piece, 89-year-old Myrtle Forney talks with her grandson, Nate Swinton. After her first husband, Nate's grandfather, passed away, she married another man named Ken.
I met him in a grocery store. Well, I'd known him as an engineer. We both worked for the railroad, and I knew who he was, but I just thought, oh, he's not married, and he's a nice man, and he's good-looking, and I'd like to know him better. And he came, I was in the grocery store buying meat when he came up to the counter to get some for himself, and I said, you buy it, and I'll cook it. And that's how we met.
And then you were married.
That's right.
You must have done a good job cooking the steak. Did you have a happy marriage with Ken?
It was a rocky marriage. It was a rocky marriage. It turned out he was an alcoholic.
And in addition to being an alcoholic, he was suffering from Alzheimer's.
That's true. But the last 6 years, he had Alzheimer's. To get really personal on this, he was, if we'd have sex, he didn't know who he was having sex with. To me, Alzheimer's was not nearly as difficult to work with as the alcohol was. He would get angry with me for something, and he'd fight me. He'd hit me. He'd toss me around. He'd throw the dishes on the floor at home. And his lawyer had told me, if he gets mean, run. And so I just ran away from home. I moved away from home twice while I lived with him. Got myself an apartment both times. Lived away from him. He would come and see me and be really nice and beg me to come back home, and he wouldn't do that again. But that happened all the time. He got drunk the first time on our honeymoon, and I didn't even realize what was going on. Are you sick or what's going on? Because I hadn't seen him drunk. And we'd gone together for several years before we got married. So that was a real surprise to me that he'd been able to control it. But after that, it happened about every 6 months.
Did you ever think about getting a divorce?
Yes, I even talked to a lawyer about getting divorced. And then that, again, when he pinned notes on my car and come back and everything will be all right, we'll work it out, and that happened, and I forgave him, and we got along for another 6 months. But we went to treatment at Norton, Kansas, for alcoholics, and I went as the spouse of an alcoholic, and it certainly helped me. Because it helped my self-esteem to have been through that treatment. We just learned how to handle each other better, and he continued to drink. So there were a lot of times that things were really bad.
Was it hard for you to have that type of second marriage after your first marriage was such a happy time?
Well, certainly it was hard, and I'd never had any time like that with my first husband. It was a very difficult life. My children knew what was happening. They were grown and gone from home. But they sympathized with me and wondered why I put up with it. And like I say, I did leave home twice for extended periods where I moved my furniture. And I reported him when he was being mean, always. It would be really hard for me to give advice because I went back so many times. I could say, don't go back. Don't go back. Leave the first time. First time anybody's mean, or if it hits you at all, leave, because it's just going to get worse, is what I would say now. But I didn't take my own advice, and we did stay together until his death, but he took his life by shooting himself.
And that's a very tragic experience for you to come home and find your husband. What was that like for you?
It was terrible. I can't think of words to describe it, but I just started screaming and ran out the door because the guy that I worked with was across the alley, and he'd just come home from work for lunch, too. And I said, told him what had happened and ran in and grabbed the phone and dialed 911. But I said, he's dead. It's he's dead. And just sat down on the couch and started crying, and people heard it over the loudspeaker system and were there coming in my door to help me. And then after I relaxed and the funeral was over and I realized, I was thankful that he'd done it. I think he did it for me as well as for himself, because he knew what a trial he was to me.
That was Myrtle Forney talking with her grandson, Nate Swinton. The piece was produced by Willow Belden with interviews recorded at StoryCorps. We're now going to hear from two residents of Jelm, Stephanie Reitner and her neighbor, Noel Richardson. Richardson worked for the Forest Service in 1957, spraying trees for beetle kill around Cody and Yellowstone. He remembers a chef that cooked for the camp. The chef, named Phonograph Jones, was in his 80s then and had also cooked for Buffalo Bill Cody and Prince Albert I of Monaco on his trip to Wyoming 100 years ago.
They had a couple of lady cooks, and we drove them off. That we were just, there were all these rowdy young 18, 19-year-old kids. So they hired another cook, and I've seen his name in print since then. His name was Phonograph Jones. He was in his 80s, and he had cooked for Buffalo Bill and the Prince of Monaco when Buffalo Bill took him cooking or hunting on Pahaska and some areas like that back more in maybe in the 1910s, in that first decade of the 20th century, I suppose. And old Phonograph was probably in his 80s then. He was a little bald-headed guy, bow-legged, ex-cowboy. Good cook. He could really cook. And they kind of told us, if you run off this cook, we're going to get a new crew and keep the cook. But it was no tense. Phonograph had a meat cleaver. And when he told you you were doing dishes, it was best not to argue. He's a pretty tough old bird. He was an awfully good cook.
What'd he cook? Do you remember? What was your
favorite? Yeah, I cook a lot of stuff. He made an applesauce cake that was to die for, you know, and it was steak and potatoes and everything. But we actually had a day off. It was a holiday, but we didn't go to town. We were so far out. And he did a whole turkey dinner. And just turkey, stuffing, dressings. He had a big tent with a couple of big wood-burning ranges. And a cherry pie for dessert was my favorite. And he cut those big cherry pies in four pieces. And I ate one of those.
God.
Then I mistakenly made a comment that I believe I could eat a whole pie. And so when the bets were all in, it was like over $20, which at that time was like 2 days' wages or something like that. I don't know. So I did it.
You ate the whole pie?
Mm-hmm. After the turkey dinner. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But I wasn't allowed to, you know, upchuck. So I had to kind of very carefully get to my bunk and lay down for quite a while. Didn't eat cherry pie for quite a while after that.
Oh, my gosh.
But I did do that, yes, absolutely. Yeah, Phonograph was the case. I saw in a Wyoming Wildlife, there was an article talking about some people cowboying or something up in that country or hunting. I don't remember. And he referenced one of the cowboys was Phonograph Jones. And that was his name. And the Phonograph had to do with an old Phonograph or something that he had or something like that. But, yeah, he was just a regular cowboy wrangler type of guy at that point. And he was, you know, but he you know, he had an enamel coffee pot on the stove like this. And he just sat there in that wood-burning heat stove in that tent, which he kept pretty hot. And it just stayed there. And then he'd just add grounds and add water. And he never, you know, he wouldn't empty it out about once a week. And you better not say anything about the coffee. I'm not kidding. One guy, and I don't remember what he said, but he said something about the food, and it wasn't complimentary. And that old meat cleaver hit that table, big old wooden picnic table right beside him. And he said, you know, I want to put you on dishes tonight. And Not a word, boy. I don't think he had any fear at all.
Meat cleaver, like,
he hit the table. He hit the table, whack.
Oh, my gosh.
On the end of the wooden table. And that's for sure that happened.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was pretty funny if you were about a half a table away. If you were too close, it was time to be really quiet. Yeah, nobody laughed much, I don't think.
That was Stephanie Reitner interviewing Noel Richardson for Wyoming Stories. Next up, a burlesque performer. Her stage name is Stella Fox, and she talks with her fiancé, Jonathan Green, about her burlesque career.
Burlesque traditionally is the art of mocking. It's the art of mocking sexuality, making fun of social norms, and just kind of being playful. It's an art form where you go up on stage and you strip, you take your clothes off. Yes, that is part of it, but it's a kind of theatrical performance. You make your costumes, you dance, you're playful, you're sexy sometimes, you're silly sometimes.
How did you get into burlesque?
I got into burlesque probably about 4 years ago. I started taking classes when I was living in a different city. It's intro to burlesque, where you learn how to strut, how to walk in heels, how to shake your butt, you know, do different things. And for me, it was really a way to push myself out of my comfort zone. I really decided to do it because it scared me. And I literally remember sitting at my computer for 10 minutes waiting to hit the button to sign up for that first class and how scared I was to do it. I've never been a shy person, but there's a difference between not being shy and being willing to take your clothes off on stage in front of people. So I took the first class and got completely addicted to it and have been a part of the community ever since.
Tell me more about the community.
To me, the community is the biggest part of burlesque. And the first class I took, there was an 18-year-old girl in it and there was a 50-year-old woman in the class. There was a mother and daughter taking it together. There was even a man who's straight and likes cross-dress and has a wife who's completely comfortable with that. So for me, it was really amazing to meet all these different people coming from so many different backgrounds, different places in life. Everyone's very supportive, very loving. You can call your friend at 3 a.m. and say, oh my God, I just saw a commercial for bubblegum and now I want to do a bubblegum act. And they'll talk to you about bubblegum for 2 hours and you could think about costumes. So it's just a very creative, loving community.
What would you say is the most difficult part of it?
Of burlesque?
Mm-hmm.
Is keeping my secret identity. I have to very much keep it separate from the rest of my life. Number one, for work, that's the biggest issue, is worrying about your employer finding out and not knowing how they'd react to it. It's something that I love, but it's something I don't want to lose my livelihood over. And then also just knowing how people are going to react. It makes some people very uncomfortable. And then some people are surprisingly laid back and cool about it. There's definitely people in my family that don't know about it. Not because I'm hiding it, but because it's something that never seems to come up. And I don't really want to show up at Christmas and say, hey, I take my top off. It's a secret life that I don't get to openly talk about.
Is it worth it?
Totally. Sometimes I wonder when I'm mostly loading up my car and I've got my hair in curls and 3 pounds of glitter on my face and I haven't eaten in 4 hours and I'm driving through a, you know, hailstorm to get to one of my performances. But somehow those 2 or 3 minutes on stage make it all worth it. I've done acts dressed up like the creature from the Black Lagoon. I've done a lumberjack act where I pretend to cut my clothes off with a fake chainsaw. I've done a U.S. tourist act where I walk around in a fanny pack and a sun visor and act like a big dork. So I like the idea of coming out on stage and not looking sexy and challenging the audience a little bit. You know, like if I came out in a full sequin gown and my hair done and my makeup done, I'm obviously looking nice. That's not a challenge for the audience to find that attractive. So I like playing with them a little bit. Coming out just really not looking good, wearing granny panties and the whole nine yards. So, yeah, so the character comes out and she's got a suitcase and she's dancing around. And as she strips, like any good traveler would, she makes sure to fold up her clothes very carefully and place them back into her suitcase. So at the end, I walk away completely with my granny panties and my pasties that look like travel stickers and my suitcase full of my packed clothes. I like that character because I think it's a little unexpected, the packing of the clothes. Most people just disrobe and throw it on the floor, or hand it off to a stage kitten that's off stage. But this one is very tight, compact. I leave nothing left on the stage when I leave.
Well, I go to many of your shows. How do you feel about me being there watching a bunch of different women get naked and occasionally men as well?
I feel fine with it. I think that it shows my comfort with our relationship. I don't fear that you're going to see some other dancer and leave me backstage somewhere. I really love the fact that you're comfortable going and watching other women and other men perform. I think that it's just a sign of your comfort sexually, and I think it's very, very attractive, actually.
What's the most important thing Stella has taught you?
To love the body that I have. I was never an overly insecure person, but I think like any woman or man will tell you there's parts of anybody's body that they're not super excited about. But going up on stage and just standing there and exposing yourself and feeling glamorous and hearing other people agree with you that you look pretty good at that exact moment, or even that they just appreciate your confidence, has made me a lot more comfortable with my body, a lot less judgmental of myself.
I cherish all of my time with you.
Aw, shucks.
And that was Stella Fox talking about her career as a burlesque performer. Stella Fox is her stage name. She spoke with her fiancé, Jonathan Green. That's his real name. The piece was produced by Willow Belden with interviews recorded at StoryCorps. You're listening to Wyoming Stories. In our final piece this month, Laramie resident Larry Strumpf recalls the challenge of learning to read as a college student.
My name's Lawrence Strumpf. I go by Larry, and I grew up in Pavilion, Wyoming, on a ranch. I went to a very small school. I think there were like 35 students in my class. I really excelled in math, but I did very bad in reading, and I was actually in a really bad accident when I was 10 years old. I got drugged by a horse and was in the hospital for a couple months. And then I got put in a remedial reading class. And you know, I just wanted to have fun. I didn't push myself. And I graduated high school with like a fifth grade reading level. And so when I came to the University of Wyoming, I had to learn to read. And that was really hard. I had to read chapters like five times. I mean, I really didn't understand the material, so I had to read it over and over and over again, and just to get, you know, the meaning of the content. One thing I did when I was first starting out, when I was trying to learn to read and all, was I would type everything, and I got to where I could type really fast because I'd type all of my notes. I'd read through a book and type notes out of the book, and so I just, you know, got to where everything I do, I type, and that helps a lot. You know, I look back at, like, you know, many of the students, you know, that I graduated with. And I remember when I graduated, it's like they were so much further ahead of me. And I was so envious of them. You know, it doesn't matter where you are. It's, you know, how much you're willing to put in and how hard you're willing to work. And so, I mean, even, you know, if someone was like 40 and they wanted to, you know, make a change, if they just started working on it, you know, it's amazing the potential that people have and they don't even realize it.
Larry Strumpf teaches at Laramie County Community College in Laramie. He's currently working on his doctorate. And that's it for this edition of Wyoming Stories. I'm Micah Schweitzer. Willow Belden and I produce this podcast. Anna Rader is our web editor, and the theme music was written and performed by Jeff Troxell. You can find each of the stories you heard today and many others online at wyomingpublicmedia.org. If you have a story you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you. Information about recording your story is available on our website. Wyoming Stories is a production of Wyoming Public Media.